Hello and welcome back to another episode of the American Dream Podcast. I am your host, Elias Torres, and today I'm joined by Dina McKay, Scrum Master and host of the Black Tech Unplugged Podcast. In this episode, Dina shares how she found her way into tech, the many roles she experimented with before finding the right one for her, and why she started Black Tech Unplugged. Make sure to check out her show wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's get into the episode.
Hello, Dina. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the American Dream.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. I know it was a long time coming, so happy to share a conversation with you.
I love having conversations and people to share their stories. I think that every time I discuss the challenges that we have in the world, especially when it comes to inequity, I always go back to the same answer, which is all about role models. So, like, for people to see and hear other people's stories is the beginning of a life-changing experience. So it's my pleasure to have the stories here. So tell us your story. What's your story? Where you come from? Before you go into the things that you're doing now, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. So born there, raised there. And then after being in Cleveland for my entire life, I went to college in New York, Buffalo, New York, to be specific. And now I am based, because from Buffalo, I came to Chicago. So currently based in Chicago, working in Chicago and enjoying the city.
What's the tech scene in Chicago?
Tech scene is really thriving in Chicago. Before the pandemic, it was really booming. A lot of startups were coming here. You know, there were a lot of startups that were actually being born here. The pandemic kind of changed that landscape a little bit, but Chicago is still a big hub for tech. I see a lot of amazing, cool, and innovative things happening here, so I'm excited for that. And there's a lot of people who are hungry to get into tech here, so I think that Chicago is doing pretty well in the tech sector here.
That's awesome. And what did you study? How did you find your way into tech? Was it through college or through work?
Very good question. So in college, I actually thought I was going to be an athletic training major. I thought I was going to be wrapping the ankles of people who were probably three times bigger than me. You know, I thought I was going to be involved with sports, because going into it, I knew I liked two things. I knew I liked sports, but I also knew I liked the business side of things. And so I went the sports route originally, tried that out for like a quarter or semester. And I was like, this is not for me. So going back to what I knew I loved and what I was good at, I was always good at computers. I was always good at figuring out how to use the latest software, always had the latest toys, gadgets, all that good stuff. And so I was like, what can I actually do with this? How can I make it a career? And so it was mentioned to go for information systems in college as my degree. So I did that for undergrad. Really liked it, really enjoyed it. Things were coming easy. Things were simple for me from that perspective. Decided to go to grad school for it. And so I continued to pursue that particular track in life until now. But it did take a long time to understand what I actually liked in tech. Because if anyone who's listening knows, tech is a huge umbrella. Like, there's so many different things that you can do in tech. So I did a lot of work to understand what exactly I wanted to do in tech, and often made different pivots so I can pursue different avenues within the tech industry.
Yeah, I think that's a very wise thing to say, right? It is one of the most challenging things to young people to pick something in life. And so then, you know, if we pick in tech, then in tech, there's so many things you can do in tech. And I think it really has to do with people's preferences and what they want, right? My daughter is a CS major at Northeastern, and so she's in tech, but she still has a long way to figure out what exactly she wants to do and how she wants to spend her time, right? Mm-hmm. Because people have different abilities and stuff. So what is your thing in tech?
Yeah, I actually want to go back and touch on what you mentioned there, because you always have to know, it's good to know yourself. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? You know, what actually excites you. And so that was one of the things that kind of started myself off in the journey. I knew I wanted to help people. I knew I wanted to build really cool things. And I also knew I had great organizational skills So I was like, what can I do that would incorporate all of that, but like still keep me in tech? So I actually started off, I started to go the deeper technical route where I was doing application development. That kind of wasn't for me. It was cool at the time, but I just did not want to code all day. That wasn't my personality. Even though I'm an introvert, I really like having conversations with people and learning about people. So I was like, okay, application development might not be for me. So I tried quality assurance next. And again, great learning experience. You're still technically
involved. Like next.
Say that again.
You're like, next. Yeah. Why didn't you like quality assurance?
And I'm always quick to say next because I'm not stuck there. I'm not a tree. I'm allowed to go wherever I want. So I'm like, okay, next, quality assurance. I did love that. And if I could possibly, maybe I would go back to that. I'm not in the automated space, so everything I did was manual. But it helped me learn the end-to-end process. Because with quality assurance, you have to learn and understand how a product is working in order to test it. So I did that. It was cool, but it still wasn't like feeding my hunger for what I wanted to do in tech. So then I got the opportunity to do like Scrum Master project management work for a project. Loved it. I loved how I could interact with the team. I loved how I could break down a technical concept to the devs, but then be able to talk to the business. So it was like working both sides of my brain from a creative standpoint, plus a business standpoint. And so started taking roles that did that kind of work and have been doing it ever since.
There's something I'm struggling that you said, that coding all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Is there such a thing as people that code all day long?
I'm sure there's people who wish they could code all day long now. And I think maybe like years ago, there was more of a chance to have like days where you could just code all day long. Now jobs are expecting someone to be social. So what I mean by social is in meetings, talking about the work that they're working on, answering questions, talking to the business, and a coder, which is, I feel like, could be a little bit hard for certain people, especially a developer. But that is a thing of the past. Now you have to have both sides of being, you know, being able to talk to your work as well as coding. And that means that it's less time for coding, which developers hate.
Right, but what I'm saying, I think that that's, and you just give me some ideas from conversations with my daughter. I'm sending her this podcast, so I'm going to try to speak to her through this. But it's the notion of how do we choose what we think we like, right? Or how we reject things that maybe we shouldn't reject because we have the wrong assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I think some of the stuff that you're implying is that we can describe a stereotypical engineer or developer that says, all I want to do is code and I don't have the ability to talk to people.
Right.
Which is not necessarily true. Those are very, very, very rare individuals. It's just that the job doesn't promote for communication. That's, for example, something I do at my companies every time is I'm like, I love when the engineers are directly communicating with the customers. I just make them. I make them. This is the practice. This is the culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so we tend to do that. And then some of them could be introverted. They could be shy. They could be whatever. They could be young. They could be old. It doesn't really matter. They end up creating, developing a love for it and a value, because it's always good to have less people in the middle of that, right? And so, and understand that the goal is not to code 100%, but is to get the right job done at the right time, right? And so understanding how things work is such a valuable thing, right? So this is, you know, something to always think about that. You also said, what do you think? You think this is forever or temporarily? What you're doing now?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's hard for me to say, because for me, yes. Yeah, so I like looking at holistic picture and looking at the future. It's doesn't really benefit me because things change. Like 5 years, especially with tech, things change so fast that this role might be obsolete, especially with AI. Might be obsolete in 2 years. I don't know. What I can say is for the next year or so, yes, this is a role that I definitely love and foresee myself doing at least for the next year. But like I said,
got it,
and then like I said before, things pivot and change. And so even just using AI as an example, because it's something that everyone's talking about, everyone thinks AI is going to take their job. Not necessarily true. Maybe there's something I learned from the process of learning how AI can help leverage for Scrum Masters that I might want to pursue that. So it really just depends.
Yeah. We're putting the horse before the cart, or the cart before the horse. I don't know how to say it, but what is this? You're the first Scrum Master on the show. Mm. What is a Scrum Master?
Yes. So a Scrum Master is someone who, if you are on an Agile team, they are the person that helps you run the Agile process. So let me kind of break down what Agile even means, because a lot of people don't know what that means either. So Agile is just basically a methodology or a way of working in which you work in a set time frame. Usually it's a 2-week period where you do discovery, you do the work, you get feedback from your particular client or customers, and then you continue that cycle. So basically what you're doing is getting continuous feedback.
My thinking, my struggle that I see, humanity could benefit from having more software built that works better to really reduce our workload, right? But we're so inefficient in building software. We're just so slow. And I'm just trying to figure out what areas are you bringing to your team to make them faster, right? Is your goal to make them faster? What is your goal? How do you say what's your goal?
When I think efficiency, I'm thinking I want my team to create tools that people are actually using, as well as eventually work faster. But the first key thing is tools or software that people are actually using. So for me, it's all about making sure that we're connecting with our customer or client and ensuring that we're providing them the value they need. Now, once we understand that value, then of course I would like to find a way to work faster. And there's different ways that you can work faster, just to break that down too. That could be adding new resources. That could be creating a roadmap that adheres to the resources you already have. So it kind of depends, but my first thing is the value piece.
Yeah, no, well said. Yeah, it's not one or the other. It's not just speed. It's speed to the wrong place won't matter, right? You still have to. Mm-hmm. So is a Scrum Master, what's the difference between a Scrum Master and a product manager?
All right, really great question. So Scrum Masters and product managers, I'm going to be honest, it depends on the company, because every company operates differently and has different expectations for roles. Usually, if you're looking at it from like plain as day textbook definition, Scrum Master is solely focused on making sure that the team runs agile ceremonies and is getting continuously improving. So that means running all the agile ceremonies. That means making sure that individuals are participating, all that good stuff. Project manager, on the other hand, can do a lot of different things. So they could be doing that same piece, making sure that you're running agile, but they also would have to work on budgets. They would have to be more involved in the roadmap creation process, making sure you actually stick to milestones and deadlines. So I would say project managers have a little bit more responsibility in regards to making sure that the strictness of a team is there, whereas Scrum Masters are more so focused on the process, or the people, I should say, because really when you think of Scrum Masters, it's people.
Did you say project or product?
So actually, I want to go back, because for Scrum Masters, it's the whole concept is people over process. So you're really focused on the team and the people. Now, from a project perspective, obviously you're focused on that product or project depending on what you're working on.
So there's three or two. Is it Scrum, product, and project, or product and project, you combine them in your company?
Ooh, another good question. So it's usually always three. So be Scrum Master, product management, and then project management. But also what I've seen at other companies is that if you were going to combine any of those three, it'd be a Scrum Master and a product owner. So those two roles can be combined, and a Scrum Master could do both.
Got it. And out of those 10 people, do you have three of those and then 7 engineers?
So that also can depend. Yes. So let's just say you had one individual who's a scrum master, one individual who is a product owner. Those two would usually be on the team, and then all the rest would be developers. And there could be different types of developers. It could be data science, it could be data engineering, but there would be some mix of developers on the team.
Yeah. Got it. Which one do you prefer? Just Scrum or a combination?
That's also a good question. I don't know. I kind of enjoy when it's just a single role. So one product owner and one Scrum Master. Reason I say that is because product owner takes a different part of your brain. And so for people who aren't familiar with product owner, let me break that down for a moment. So a product owner is someone who basically has the vision for the entire product. They're creating the roadmap. They're telling you when team members need certain items completed. They are also acting as kind of like the leader or the go-to person in regards to what the end product should look like. And so when you're doing that, if you're trying to do that as well as coach a team, sometimes it can get overwhelming depending on the level of maturity of the team. So it's good to have those as separate roles, but I definitely can understand how you could push that all into one role itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And no, this is awesome. I think this is always a good reminder. I mean, in my, and when you're doing a Scrum Master, do you only do a Scrum Master for one team or multiple teams?
Another great question. So again, this is going to vary by whatever company or organization that you're working for. Now, for me, I am the Scrum Master for two teams, which is fine and is a balance for me. But sometimes people only have one team, and that's good too, depending on your product. Maybe you have a huge product.
What's the maximum you think that you could manage as a Scrum? How many maximum number of teams?
I think two is like a sweet spot. I think depending on the workload, possibly three, but that'd be overwhelming because you have, again, the agile ceremonies you have to attend. So if you have to do that three times within a week, that could be overwhelming if you don't schedule it right. But I do think two is like the sweet spot in order, because as a Scrum Master, you still want to give those individuals on the team their own amount of attention. And so two would be probably the best.
I can ask you a million questions because I'm a devil's advocate to Scrum Master, to Agile, because
why?
It's like, because people are, time is precious, right? And so the question is, I always look at every ceremony or every activity, and I have to make sure that I'm deriving value out of it, right? And that people are enjoying it, right? So the thing is that it's about the team culture, right? It's like always reassessing. In the same way, maybe I'm a scrum of scrum, right? In the sense that I also like to, with my teams, analyze the process itself and iterate it, right? Mm-hmm. And say, if the process is not delivering the satisfaction or the speed or the solution based on the project, willing to change it, simplify, or remove, right? In order to achieve better results. Because the results were in agreement, right? It's either doing the right thing for the customer, the value, and generating it in as timely as possible as we can, right?
Right.
With quality. So this, that, it always blows up. It is something that in the world of business and entrepreneurship, you always have limited resources, right? And so you have to figure out, how do you move faster as a company? How do you split? How do you create units? My favorite unit is kind of like close to between 3 to 5 people. Don't like teams that are too large. Keep it really, really, increase the quality of the people in it and make it smaller, because then it's a tighter communication loop. And so to create constant communication that could be managed, right? Because the more you add people into it, the more you need ceremony and the process in the organization for communication to flow, all right? Because it's a lot of people, right? But there's apps that they have come out that they show you in their calendar based on mm-hmm. salary, how much each meeting costs. And so that's another way to also keep in mind. I think like Shopify did something where like you cannot have meetings that have more than three people in it. It's just they're mm-hmm. not allowed. And so it's like an interesting question, right? How does that make Agile evolve, right? If that is a method that works or not, right? Because the larger the group, like another CEO, Frank Slootman, he was the CEO of Snowflake and the CEO of ServiceNow, said to me, it's like, Elias, if there's people in a meeting that are not speaking, then that should be not, that shouldn't be there, right? And so like, so if people are gonna only speak 1% of the time, 10% of the time, what are they doing mm-hmm. the other 90% of them? So it's a difficult thing. So communication is expensive, alignment is expensive, right? And that's why, that's kind of what I meant about the wasting or the inefficiency. But I think there's another thing that
I
love.
I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here because so talking about going to the ceremony. So if you're not having people in meeting and you're not having the agile ceremonies, how are you prepping so you know what to work on next? When does that happen? Is it just a conversation like via Teams or Slack? Or how is that being communicated with the teams if you don't have the ceremonies?
No, I 1,000%. You have to know, one of the things that I always push to people, you have to know what you're working on. I want to give you the award for the most aligned Scrum Master I've ever met with me. And I'm a radical. I'm a radical on speed and efficiency, but that's what I say. I said at the beginning, like the principles, I agree. Compared to waterfall, we need to be agile. We need to iterate. We need to find the right answer. And it's fascinating. I mean, I think that's what I do. I mean, like my current company doesn't have a product. We're just servicing customers. And so we need to help them, and we're iterating, we're consulting, and we are like building Gen AI solutions for them. And we are effectively trying to run a process with them, right? Of like meeting with them often, showing them our progress, asking them a question, and building things quickly that work, right? And so, but I know that there's another thing that you like besides being a Scrum Master.
Okay.
You like something called Black Tech Unplugged.
Yes, I do very much.
We're like twins, basically. We like agility, and we like podcasts for our people. Tell me about Black Tech Unplugged.
So Black Tech Unplugged is about Blacks who are working in tech. They get an opportunity similar to your podcast to share their story and then also talk about different roles in tech. So as we mentioned, tech is a huge umbrella. And so Black Tech Unplugged allows people to like break down what are their roles, what do you need for that role, what's the characteristics you need, all within an episode that's usually under an hour. So I release that about bi-weekly, so every 2 weeks, and I've been doing it for 7 years now, which is astonishing to say.
what's some of the best feedback or story you've heard of people listening to your podcast?
Oh, best feedback. I think one theme that everyone consistently talks about is the networking piece, because we think that, you know, we go to these, like you get a job and networking stops, and it's like, no, you need to always be networking, because what if there are layoffs, which a lot of people are experiencing now, or what if there are situations where, you know, you get a job and you're just like, this isn't really for me. You need that network to be able to fall back on. And so that's a reoccurring thing that's always talked about. And then also just like how to network. There's so many different tips in so many of the episodes that people use. And so it's always great to hear that the topics and advice that's being given is actually being used by listeners.
For our listeners, give us top tip on networking.
Top tip on networking. Network with anyone. It doesn't have to be anyone. The people that you network with don't have to look exactly like you. They don't have to be the role that you're currently in. You can literally network with anybody and use that to your advantage.
But also another top tier tip along with that is make sure you actually stay connected to the people that you network with. A lot of times we meet people, we think they're awesome, and, you know, we only talk to them like once every 3 years. That's not networking. You need to be talking to them more often, celebrating, even if you're like using LinkedIn as an example. If they post something, make sure you like it or celebrate and comment on it. Just make sure that you're actually building a real connection, not just a, you know, it was nice to meet you that one time.
But so if you're telling people to network with everyone or anyone, and then you tell them to build a deep relationship with all of them, at some point, wouldn't I just spend my entire day just networking?
I mean, you could. I mean, I'm sure there are some professional networkers out there. But to be clear, yes, you can meet a lot of people, but you don't have to build a, what I wouldn't say, you wouldn't build a deep relationship with every one of them. Build the deep relationships with people who are your tribe, people who relate to you, people who you truly connect with. Not every single person that you're networking with. Like I said, there's also ways to stay connected, just liking a LinkedIn post or following up. But the people that are truly your tribe, people who can truly help you, people who you might want to emulate, those are the people that you go deeper with from a networking perspective.
And recently, some people call it social climbing. Do you think that people should be pushing, you know, people talk about also that notion of the circle you are, the six people you are, like the six people that are, you know, you spend the time with. So right. Should you be like pruning and changing your networking circle, the people you're building relationships?
I don't know. I feel like that kind of depends, because I think we think of people as a monolith. People evolve, and maybe, you know, you start off with these six individuals. They were fitting your goals for the first 6 months, but you're changing your mindset. You're changing your goals. You might want to go in a new direction. You might have to change the people that are your six core people. So I think that really depends on the person. For me, I call them like kind of like your core council, right? There's going to be people who just relate to you, understand you to your core, understand the direction that you want to go, and understand your daily life. And it might not be all six people, but there's usually like two or three people that you keep in rotation. But you also make that switch just based on your evolution and your growth and your mindset for that period of time. So just to point out there, like, you don't have to worry if your core networking group changes. It happens all the time.
Yeah. I like what you're saying, right, about the podcast and helping. I love the heart that you have, right, to consistently spend this time for 7 years and being able to persist on an endeavor that has allowed people to increase their network, right? And they're learning how to create a network. Question, and your journey into finding something you like today, right? And that matches to your interests and your personality. What would you give as a call to action to our listeners? What would you try to distill some advice, art or science about anything you want?
So my one piece of advice is try everything. A lot of times we as individuals, as well as society, try to put you in a box. Like, you are supposed to do X, Y, Z. Don't believe that. You can be anything that you want to be. You can try anything that you want to try and do the thing that brings you joy every day. So for instance, yes, I'm a scrum master, but if I didn't take a chance and, you know, put myself forward, I would never have a podcast, because I was supposed to be in tech and just focus on being in tech and being a scrum master. No, I want to do other things. There's other facets to me. So don't stay in the box. Try all the things. You might try something and you might want to even make it a career. It's okay to pivot, but try the things and don't be settled down and titled and, you know, have a label of being one thing. You can be whatever you want to be. You can try whatever you want to try and go out there and try it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love it. My version of that is say yes to everything.
Okay. Like, yes.
When there's an opportunity, because try everything is more complicated, because you're like, then I was like, oh, let me list everything and let me go do it in order. But just let life guide you some, right? It's the people that come to me and they say, Elias, do you want to do this? Elias, would you like to talk about this? And that's how it creates new things that I'd never done before. And then to me, it's a pleasure when I can do it with people that are inviting me, that I like, that are part of my tribe, and they say, do something, and I say yes, right? Some people say, I'll try anything once. But to me, it's like, always say yes. And then you can decide not to do it or not, but say yes to create those moments and those opportunities.
Yep. And I also think of it, though, from my perspective, two things. One is like, you know how people talk about having a bucket list. It's almost like having a bucket list of, you know, these are the things that kind of, you know, cross my mind of maybe trying. So it's not something that you can't try everything in a week. Like, things come and go, interests come and go. But have that list and start checking it off, like, one by one. It doesn't have to, again, be in a weekend. It can be just through a lifetime. And then sometimes there's not going to be people who want to do it with you. There's not going to be a friend group or, you know, someone that you meet that wants to do it with you. Try it alone anyway. Do it solo. Doing things solo is fine, even though, contrary to some belief, doing things solo is usually where you learn the most about yourself and you sometimes have a better experience.
That's the takeaway I'll take, because I don't like doing anything solo. So I'll take that as my experimentation. I'm going to like do solo things.
Yeah.
Dina, thank you so much for being on the show. There's a lot of gems for people to pick up, but it's up for them to pick them up and try them out.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you had me on. Thank you for having me on. Also, if anyone wants to connect, you can find me on social media, Black Tech Unplugged, on everything from Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that good stuff. And then just my name, Dina_McKay, at Instagram and Twitter as well. So happy to connect, happy to answer any more tech questions or just give more advice.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. And share the episode with your friends. Our work isn't done until everyone has equal access to their dreams.